I'm Corey Grushka, the founder of Stories Bureau, a creative agency that specializes in storytelling and multimedia creative for all things insights.
And I'm Simrat Saran, a marketing expert with over 15 years' experience in helping the biggest brands create true memories.
I want to inspire you to think bigger, broader, and more creatively.
And I want to push you to make you think and go beyond the job description.
Let's get started.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Bolian. I'm president of Four Peaks, originally from Georgia, worked at a consulting firm called ZS Associates, then went to business school at Kellogg, consultant at McKinsey in Atlanta and over in London, joined AB InBev in a global strategy role, then moved over into an insights role, leading a few different teams for marketing intelligence, marketing insights, then moved to Alabama to run a sales team, and then moved over to Tempe, Arizona to be the president of Four Peaks.
Jeremy, I'm pumped to have you on. You have a fascinating background, and obviously this is an insights podcast, and you're the CEO of a craft brewer. So I think it's both maybe counterintuitive that we would have you on, but also very intriguing that I think for a lot of people in insights to hear from your perspective. So like, let's start life's like your career kind of trajectory, how you got here.
Yep.
And the medium version, you know what I mean? Not the abridged, but not the full story, you know?
Yeah, I'll hit the highlights. So originally from Georgia, got into business early. My family had an albino iguana breeding business when I was in middle school, which was fascinating and a chance to learn what that what business meant and how hard it is to get albino iguanas to breed in captivity. Did undergrad at Emory and then went into first
round. I didn't know that. That's wild.
Yeah, it was
fun. That's a whole other conversation.
That's how I got my first job, and I was referred to as Iguana Boy at the consulting firm that I worked with. But did that for a few years, did business school up at Kellogg, focusing on entrepreneurship and marketing, kind of just understanding people, business, which was awesome. Stayed in consulting, joined McKinsey back down in Atlanta, doing a whole host of things across many different industries, many different projects, both in the U.S., then transferred over to McKinsey London. And it was awesome. It was a chance to really see business at the heart of it, to really kind of dive into solving problems, working with different types of people. So did that for a couple of years, then joined Anheuser-Busch InBev over in London in a global strategy internal consulting role, which was a chance to kind of apply that consulting lens for a big company and see how do you look at global resource allocation, how do you look at capabilities, a lot of fun stuff. But I realized I was still very far away from the business, and each day was building PowerPoints and doing Excels and things, but not really involved in the day-to-day. So wanted to move closer to the consumer, moved into marketing, so moved to New York and had teams doing portfolio strategy, marketing budget, and marketing analytics, kind of building those capabilities. And so during that time, we'll talk some about it, but trying to do everything we can to just really love and understand and embrace the consumer and build strategies around that. Because for a beer company, you have so many different brands, you have a lot of different things you can do. And really every single one of them needs to be consumer led and consumer first. So we did a lot to really focus and build some frameworks around that. Then said, cool, I'm still not as close to the consumer as I want to be. And so a few years ago, moved down to be running Alabama, Mississippi for Anheuser-Busch, working with wholesalers, working with consumers, doing activations. It was incredible. So did a couple years doing that and wanted to put it together to run a business and actually see it from the ground up. And so about a year ago, came over and now the CEO, president of Four Peaks over here in Tempe, Arizona. So getting the chance to kind of see consumers every day in the pub that we run, make sure we're innovating more effectively towards consumer needs and work with them on a day-to-day basis. But it's been really fun and a lot of different experiences to see.
Now, Four Peaks is was an acquisition by ABI, by Anheuser-Busch.
Yep.
And it has a retail side also, but it's a craft brewer. Which is super interesting, but I think you glossed over maybe one of the most relevant points, which was you came to Anheuser-Busch, you said like portfolio and analytics, but then you ended up from there in a pure like senior director of insights role, right? Like,
correct.
I feel like I know this, but how did that happen?
Yeah, so we kind of evolved. I think as with anything, things change. And so a lot of what we were doing was taking that framework. And so the role was a bit kind of an amoeba and a lot of different things. But what I started to be responsible for was really driving the insights function of Anheuser-Busch. And so bringing that, we created a project called People First, which was really about just saying, what do we do to make sure everybody in the building in New York was closer and more connected to consumers? And that's where kind of when we were working together, got to kind of step up and take that on, which was a good chance to build not only just frameworks around what we would call kind of long-term enduring spaces, but very specifically figure out what are the consumer needs? What are the things that we know that people, why do people drink alcohol? What are the things that they're looking for? And when they're shopping versus when they're consuming, a lot of that nuance is very, very detailed. And so that was my role, was kind of integrating with the category teams to be able to saying, okay, at retail, what does this look like? Integrating more with senior leadership to say, what would the impact be on some of our biggest brands? And really put those things together to go deeper in understanding. And I spent a lot of time then getting to go benchmark companies and talking to very high up people across different ones and said, what do you guys do? And candidly, a lot of times the answer was, we're working on it. Like, we wish we did more. We're thinking about it. And so we kind of said, okay, who do we admire? What are the programs that they have in place? And how can we make this happen? And we did some really cool things. If you remember, one of our innovation weeks was one of the big deliverables that we had, where we sent people on treks across the country to go literally spend time in consumers' houses, to go talk to them when they're shopping, and then using that information to go change and impact the innovations that were coming out of Anheuser-Busch and out of the work that we were doing. And so I think with that, when you really just go sit down with a Gen Z 21-year-old consumer and just listen, and it's some of the craziest times, some of the most insightful times, but we were responsible for a lot of just a program to bring everybody closer, a program to change the way innovation and insights came together, and then just generally aligning the portfolio and aligning everything that we did to the needs of consumers, all the way from the idea of the innovation through media and everything else that we were able to do.
When you joined, so this is interesting, when you joined after McKinsey, you wanted a role like, you were eager to learn about the consumer and how larger enterprise companies get close to the consumer. Like, that was an interest of yours in terms of your career at that moment?
Yeah, it was. And if I said that I had it all planned out, I'd be lying. But
nobody does.
We'll figure it out one day. But yeah. A lot of it was knowing that that's where I was passionate about. And you know, some experiences I didn't talk about. I've tried starting a couple companies, one of them while I was an undergrad, to sell advertising on the side of a Ferrari, and really had this idea. I was sitting in marketing classes and they kept telling us, like, people are trying everything they can to get away from ads. And I was sitting there and I was like, okay. And my brother had an exotic car rental business. I knew when you ride around in a bright red Ferrari, people are going out of their way to take pictures and to stare and run down the street. And so that kind of kicked off.
It's a good marketing hack. Like, you don't see that much, you know?
Correct.
I saw it with a Cybertruck the other day. I don't know if you out on the west side of the country, you've probably seen that, but
there's a few, but it's not as used as much as it should be, because people go by, if you look at it, they're trying to fast forward through TV commercials. They're trying to ignore the billboards they see. And you see a Cybertruck, you see a Ferrari, you see a Lamborghini, and people go crazy. And that kind of kicked off my love of marketing and saying, okay, what do we do to make that kind of work? And how do you leverage the things that people want to talk about, want to see, versus just saying, hey, this is another thing, this is a random kind of thing that we're going to try to push and actually have pull of marketing. So that was one of the most formative experiences. And through my time in consulting, a lot of it was done in the first round at a company called ZS Associates, doing market research, of doing big quant surveys of physicians and consumers and a ton of different groups, and trying to understand a lot of the why. And so do a big quant survey. And then I was literally leading at 24 years old, leading focus groups with 5 to 7 people sitting there and asking questions of, why do you do this? What do you think about this? Ranging from a whole host of different things. So that was the first time to actually get in front of a consumer and be like, this is what my marketing school professor would have said, but let's put that to work and see, how do we use stats in the market research? How do we actually go deeper? And then when we get the answer on paper, we've got to add color to it, because too often you can get a survey and you can shape that in a lot of different ways. But if you only are getting the data that 67% of people said this, great. But why? What do I do with that? And what would it take? You know, do they want to see a Ferrari? Do they want to see a Cybertruck? Like, I think there's too much of that, of just using data only. And the real magic, we always talk about art and science that goes with it, but the real art is actually getting that color. And that's what I spent a lot of the first couple of years of consulting doing, was kind of getting in front of people and being the one to kind of take everything up on how do we understand that consumer, understand the opportunity, and put it together in a way that would start to move businesses forward. So there were a lot of very influential things, ranging from iguanas to Ferraris to pharma consulting to a lot of different things. And in McKinsey, I loved it. It was awesome. It was a huge learning opportunity, but I knew that I wanted to get closer to that marketing angle. That's why in business school, a lot of the classes I took were around building brand equity, and some of the best marketing professors I've ever heard from about how do you actually build an ad brief. I had no idea.
Kellogg also is the place to find those people. So
it is. I was in just a wonderland of learning. And so I think that the theme through has been kind of marketing and more just like slightly disruptive, or understanding what that looks like. And then being able to put that to work. An example being in Alabama, Mississippi, we were able to get a Lamborghini when we were launching a new product. And we had a Lamborghini that was a company car that we drove around everywhere. And we were able to get reactions and use it to drive trial and awareness and things that otherwise the beer industry
never does. Did you wrap it?
What brand?
Yeah.
It was a Michelob Ultra Seltzer. So it was completely branded. It was awesome. And so from that, I had the idea and then was told, figure out a way to make it happen. And I think that's where this gets fun, is when you actually start to see things in action, of seeing a Lamborghini in Mississippi that nobody's ever seen before. Wild. And they come up and they're like, what is this? Why? Like, tell me more about the product, and really starting to do some fun things. So I think to me, marketing, it gets boring, and it gets kind of seen as being a boring thing because it can just be quant survey, quant survey, quant survey. It's got to go beyond that, and it's got to be more about bringing that consumer to life and actually bringing them into your meetings and bringing them into your Lamborghini and talking to people. We went to a bar in New York and just sat down with Gen Z for 3 hours and just listened. And 21 to 24-year-olds, and we were asking, like, how do you think about alcohol? How do you think about water? How do you think about all these things? Like, what are the things that matter to you culturally?
This was iWeek, by the way,
what you're talking about? A separate even event from that. So iWeek, we did those treks as well. And then
we did the documentary. We were the documentarians of iWeek. I don't know if you remember, but we did we produced like a bunch of videos. We interviewed all of you all. Anyway,
yes, and maybe we did another one with it. And I think that was the goal, was getting out there so much that I think you might be right that one of them was going out to some of the bars and just getting in front of people. And that was not necessarily as much of the norm as you would think in a lot of big companies that I've worked with. And so trying to get people out in the forefront and then being able to document, because it's so easy to do it and get really energized after 1-3 hours, but how do you take that and actually work with it and learn and do things? So I think that's been a lot of the fun, is being able to like go on safaris, go on consumer treks, and do a lot. And I think you've gotten to see a lot of those firsthand too.
Your perspective is so interesting for like, especially for like an insights audience, which like most of the insights podcasts or conferences and stuff, I don't know if you remember from then. But like, it's all insights. You know what I mean? It's generally all insights people, maybe analytics people, a little bit of innovation maybe. But like your take also from the sales perspective. So you left insights and you went into a pretty hardcore sales role.
Correct.
If you went back into insights after that sales role, would you bring a different perspective? And what would that perspective be?
Very eye-opening, because I always assumed we were sitting in New York and assuming that all the frameworks, all that consumer understanding, the richness of shopping, trip missions, all these things were understood by everybody in the company. And you get to deep parts of the field in big companies, which is normal. And you kind of start to realize that there's really a lot that is good and that's known, but there's still a level that you can bring of why are certain brands doing the things that they're doing? What are the opportunities to go bigger with a lot of the different types of initiatives and programs and things that can be out there? And so I think the big thing is, and push everybody who's in an insights role to go out and just immerse and get out there, whether it's taking a role or just going out for a period. For me, the big learning was everything that I thought was kind of known and had been communicated hadn't made it. And some of it had, some of it hadn't. There were still questions. And I think a lot of times everybody gets so busy running the day to day and gets so caught up in here's what we've got going on. Here's the numbers that we got to hit. And it's easy to think that people know the same data, have used the same data sources. And when you're in a central role, you get access to IRI and Numerator and a lot of different data sources that when you're in the field, you don't always get or you don't always know are available there. And so I think the skill set and that kind of consumer-centric mindset is not as prevalent in many of the companies that I've worked for and worked with that I thought that it was. And so to me, when you go out in the field and then if you go back into a central role, just taking that, and I feel like the main thing is that empathy. Is it's easy to kind of have a point of view of like, oh, everyone should know this or could know this, but just understanding that everybody comes from different backgrounds, different experiences, and different kind of beliefs. And so I think having the empathy of what does it take to both reach the people that are in the field that are actually going to be doing things on a day-to-day basis? What does it take for them to know and to learn? And then from there, how do you take those learnings and basically get better? Because part of what I wanted to do was by going out in the field and being able to really understand is to shape things in a more meaningful way and say, this is what we heard from people that otherwise we may not have ever gotten to go in touch with and go into, whether it's different parts of college campuses or more rural areas or more urban areas. It's just putting all of that together to shape the plans and shape the strategies that would have only made me a better marketer if that is where I'd gone back. But in a lot of ways, what I've tried to do is bring that into the craft beer side of the world and put those things together. And so that you understand sales, you understand the marketing angles, and from there being able to use that to bring people a product that's even better. We've got innovations coming out with different flavors and different graphics and stuff. And so I think when you look at that, it's really fun to see the different angles. And if you only see it from one angle, I think it can be a little bit more challenging to really develop some of that empathy that's easy to say, but really, really hard to do in practice.
Yeah, it's super interesting. The disconnect from like the center where insights is always in the center. You know what I mean? At all the big enterprise level companies, there it always, especially in like CPG or whatever, it's always sitting in the corporate somehow, attached to marketing, attached to this, attached to... and the connection to the field in whatever industry or to the franchisees, in like food and restaurant or to, you know, is, attenuated, you know? And I think, it's an interesting idea of like, because how many people have had the experience that you have of being like just straight up in an insights kind of leadership role and then moving like into sales, you know, normally it's insights, you know, and you kind of either stay in that role, maybe marketing, you know, maybe. But I think that experience is wild. And I guess my question is, it's not a question, it's an observation, but like the idea of an insights person having experience cross-training in the field, like being more exposed in the field, it's both good for the insights person and the function, but it's also good to bring those insights to the field, you know, to take them to the kind of the ends of the business. And it's not done.
No, I obviously I'm biased, but to me, Anheuser-Busch is one of the best in the business at really giving, number one, investing, because it does take a lot of money, a lot of time to make sure you're building the capabilities and having everything from brand health trackers all the way through consumer treks to go to Kansas City, Miami, everywhere across the country. And being able to have category functions and insight functions and everything, I think number one, is really awesome. And the more I've learned, the more I've learned how rare that actually is in terms of having companies that are betting behind and really willing to spend that money. But it's some of the best money I think you can spend. So I think number one, been very fortunate in the roles that I've had and in the ability to have that investment and support. And then number two is having a place that lets you in some ways be a generalist of, while I love insights, I love Marketer, I'm never going to be as good at SAMROD as understanding what happens in the mind and people with PhDs and all these things. But to me, that generalist ability and mindset has been really important, both in consulting and through my career, to be able to like apply, how do you take those learnings that you had on paper or in PowerPoint to then see, okay, let's do that at an event that we're doing in Birmingham, Alabama. And I think that those things have been really good to be able to see and put them into action, and been very fortunate that the company is supporting and actually betting behind people taking a leap. Because in many ways, while I had marketing experience in school, when I took some of the roles in New York, I didn't know as much as I could have to be able to do some of these things. And I think that's where being able to learn and kind of have mostly apprenticeships from some really good, really intelligent people puts you in a position to be able to go get used to the systems and the processes. And there's a lot of just value and richness to then take it and then bring it back. So I've been extremely fortunate, and I feel like the big benefit is having companies that are both thinking a little bit forward looking and being willing to understand what does that look like in terms of having more of a consumer lens and being able to invest in and make sure you've got the right people, and then let you take risks and jump into roles and do a lot of things that are really, really fun. So I think each of those has made me better at each step. But to your point, the big point is being still using those and feeding it back into the learnings and the systems and the people and saying, cool, hey, let's get out here, come have more meetings and be able to say, this thing that we did 4 years ago isn't fully embedded yet. Mm-hmm. So let's find ways to do that more and be able to bring that to the surface. And so I think that's where it's been very, very neat to be able to have that support, have that backing, and now bring that a little bit more full circle. But it is rare.
It is rare. That's the point. But even at AB, it's rare. You know, like you're somewhat, I think, anomalous even at AB in terms of like going. And it's not necessary. I think it's you and the path you took more so than like, and I don't know what's going on in AB, but like the other clients that I'm thinking of in my head for sure could really use. I feel like you're a head of insights for a 40 person insights function or an insights and analytics function of 100. Like, why not cross train a little bit? Send for 6 months your senior manager of insights, that's a young star, out into the field, you know, like getting experience with wholesalers, getting experience with like with your bottlers and like with with your customers and in the stores, you know, which you never get. That I think would enrich the field, and it would also bring insights. Just a point of view, you know, that like otherwise doesn't exist, I don't think.
I think that was one of the learnings when we were doing more benchmarking is this is an opportunity across of really building that kind of skill set and building that level of consumer empathy and understanding. And I think everybody is trying to, but it's hard. Like if this was easy, then none of us would have jobs and it'd be a lot more of a different game. But it's really about developing and being intentional, because the desire for being consumer led, having consumer empathy, I think is there consistently. It's how do you have that more consistently and more embedded? And to your point, find mechanisms to do it and pushing people. I had a lot of mentors throughout many different companies that had told me, get out in the field, go as close to you can as you can to really just understand people, and that will pay dividends in the future. And I think when a lot of people look at my career, they say it's been nonlinear. It has been very much a jumping around the globe, jumping around to different roles, but it's had the ability to be a generalist, the ability to stay close to consumers, and then trying to drive an impact and be able to make a difference in the stuff that I've been able to do. And I think that companies want that, but if you're not extremely intentional about fostering it, then I think you can run into a little bit of each year it's alive, oh, we should, or mm-hmm. let's make sure this year we do X, Y, Z. And I think a lot of that's putting it into practice today and saying, let's at least start. It's not going to be perfect. Some of the first consumer treks we did weren't mm-hmm. great. Like, we weren't sure what to ask. We weren't sure what to do. And it only takes just repetition and building that muscle of getting out there and kind of putting insights into practice a lot more than when we started. And mm-hmm. again, I was not the first person to bring insights to AB. I tried to elevate the game. I tried to kind of bring a lot more to the forefront, but it's been a history, and my role wouldn't have even existed if there weren't people before me who had started on that journey and started brand equity programs and done a lot of different mm-hmm. things that were moving along the journey. And I talked to a couple of CMOs. They're like, in the next year, we're going to do these 10 things. And I'm like, I don't think you are. Yeah. Like, it's a great ambition and set that goal, but don't beat yourself up if at the end of a year you're like, man, we still have so much to go. Like, that's actually the exciting part, because then you can kind of take that excitement and that path forward and say, here's what we've done, and let's celebrate those wins. But also, like, it doesn't have to be everything gets changed in 1 year. It's about building that and starting on that journey.
Did you have particular, so when you were in sales, I wasn't going to ask this question, but when you were in the sales role, did you have, were particular kind of like research project deliverables particularly useful to in the field? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, like, you know, the landscape of the kind of work day to day that an insights function does. What in your mind, from your like sales and now like entrepreneur, is the most effective and actually does find its way to the ear of the sales leadership in the field, you know, and like the even just the salespeople in the field? Like, what is, do you have a perspective? I'm sure you do.
It's a critical question. What I learned was simplicity, and what I thought was simplicity coming from a McKinsey consulting lens is not necessarily simplicity. Yeah. And when I say that, it's a little bit of realizing we could do the most sophisticated demand landscape you've ever seen. But if you expect every rep across the country, both at your own company, and Beer's an interesting one with a three-tier system, that both mm-hmm. the Anheuser-Busch team as well as the wholesalers that then makes it through to the retail accounts, that they all understand that strategy in that sophisticated way, they don't. And there's always opportunity for everybody to kind of move forward and keep progressing. But to me, a lot of the learning was when we were starting to understand consumers, we created something called enduring trends, enduring spaces. And that was just a simple framework to understand how do people think about the beer category and things about premiumizing and things about value and things about health and wellness that go into a lot of choices people make. And those I heard people say, and I was like, okay, so I know that some of those things have very clearly come through, because it's easy to remember, it's easy to recite, and it moves the business forward. Even though if every single person understood my perfect portfolio strategy and everything I have on this page, but that wasn't realistic. And so to me, the simple things and the things that tied to everyday experiences, because you can come up with something that conceptually, even from an innovation standpoint, conceptually, this thing is right. Like, this is what people need. It doesn't always get communicated through of why they could benefit from this, or what it looks like, or what types of benefits come from a product like that. And so I think I learned pretty quickly that if you can't make it simple and you can't tie it to something that matters for people, and many times that's bonuses. And mm-hmm. it's of, okay, sure, we may need to do this for this one brand, but we also have to hit these types of numbers. And that's normal in any sales role. But how do you blend those of making sure that you give somebody the how of knowing, mm-hmm. okay, you're going to grow more of your premium part of the business. So you may just think, oh, let's go cut price and see how much volume we can get. But if you can enable people and say, consumers who are shopping for a premium beer care about this, and then they start to think, huh, well, we host these types of events. We sponsored this. We do these things. Maybe what I should be doing would be tying this experience to this type of a brand, and that's going to build a brand meaning much more than if they can find it for $5 off at a grocery store. And I think for me, when I started to see the sales numbers, the first thing you do is say, how on earth do I get there? And in an ideal world, insights and consumer understanding starts to come to that and starts to answer the question of, okay, for these brands, we need to lean in more into these passion points, into these spaces, these retailers. And if you do that effectively, then you can start to hit your goals and start to turn around performance and do things versus if you're only focused on just how much can we sell? What is the main thing we can do? Then you're putting yourself at risk of not really understanding that consumer and doing the right thing. So I think for me, when I was in the field, the things that I thought everybody knew, and look at this great thinking I did, I started to learn why, especially more of the sales colleagues that I would work with when I was developing them, would give me a pause and say, mm-hmm. I hear you, but how am I going to tell this to 1,000 people and get them to understand it in a meaningful way? And earlier in my career, I was like, wait, no, let me tell you again why this thinking is so good. But they knew the reality is, even if it's great thinking, even if it's the right thinking, there's certain times where you need to make sure you really put it in perspective for the people that have to make it work. And
actionable.
Won't go into details, but there was a consulting project where we did some incredible thinking up till very late hours. And we were like, this is what you should do. This is the products that you should offer. This is how you will have some good opportunities to really reach consumers in a different way. And I called back the client we'd been working with, and I was stoked. It was a 6-month project. It was awesome. And I called him back 2 months later. I was like, hey, just checking in. How are things going? How are you doing? Like, have you guys been able to implement any of that? And same kind of response as you get in a lot of things of like, yeah, no, we're still trying to think through. I was like, you haven't done any of it, have you? And it highlighted that really good thinking without mm-hmm. execution doesn't do anything. And that's what I've tried to use to guide. And I still get too analytical and love a good Excel. But if you just have a good answer that sits on a PowerPoint deck that's on somebody's computer, that doesn't move the needle. And I think there's too many opportunities or too often where people have really good thinking and get really excited about their thinking, mm-hmm. but they don't put it in a way that actually somebody can pick up and run with. And that's what I've tried to find ways to do. But that's the hard part, is because what you think is simple and what Samrat thinks is simple, he's mm-hmm. sometimes explained to me and I'm like, nope, that's not way simple. Over my
yeah,
head.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
right.
And that's the fine line to walk.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much there. Look, part of it is making it simple, making it actionable, how it's delivered, activating the idea, persuading. Like, so that gets into some of the stuff we do, right? Mm-hmm. The creative around it and all that. But the other part is where a lot of, look, in a big corporate environment, how much of the work sits on a shelf? 80%, 70%, at least 50, 40%?
Yeah, too much.
Which is the nature of bureaucracy. It's the nature of like large organizations. There's going to be a lot of inefficiency. There's going to be a lot of like, you're not going to have like a perfectly good roadmap vision for a project that you're spending $500,000 on and then know exactly how to deliver, like, what's the output, mm-hmm. the deliver, and having a deliverable that is ready to go to the CEO in just the right way that factors in all the variables that are needed within the company with perfect information, it falls down almost like the majority of the time. It doesn't work out. But the key in insights to me is like, it needs to be insightful. It needs to be an insight. It needs to be a business insight that like takes in enough variables with enough of the imperfect information that you have in a sophisticated way that is simple enough, you know, like complex enough, but actually gets actioned, right? So like, how do you tell the story to the right audience and all that stuff, but how do you also deliver an actual insight? And this isn't limited to insights. Every R&D, everybody, innovation have problems with this too. But like,
yeah.
deriving the right thing, you know, that's going to move the needle. That's the gem that doesn't happen all the time.
I think you just characterized the magic or the hard part of insights is like the balancing of a good insight that actually has richness and is actionable with the reality of bureaucracy and big companies and the reality of business, and then with actually making things happen at every level of the company. And I think that's why people like us exist, is because there's too much opportunity to be able to really bring a lens of something that is not just a, oh, I already knew that, but also not something that you can't get all the way through that chain. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody who cracks it, there's been plenty of people to admire. If you look at Apple, you look at Amazon, you look at even, you know, oil and gas, you look at insert whatever industry you want to look at, there's people who have managed to cut through and to bring something that is insightful, but actionable and kind of can get through that whole process. And I think that's the hard part. And I think that's where companies struggle a lot. I've had people I worked with in AB Insights that have moved into other CPG and catch up with them. And it's the same challenges of how do you actually bring that? And in a company that needs to scale, get that across the line. Because as a small company, you don't have the same resources. You have to be scrappy. You don't have Numerator data down to the state level and all these things. And even in the states I've worked in, the data has led us short, where it's like, okay, we don't actually have a sample size to do what I could at a national level. And so if I want to put things to work at a more local level, I need to aggregate a few things or to find other ways. But it's not always going to give you that perfect answer, because if it did, we'd all be robots. It would just be a, here's what you should do. And bringing all of those things together, I think, is the magic of insights and the magic of especially insights of the future, which is always the moniker. And kind of, you can make some pretty slides. We work together a lot on that premise. But if you think 10 years from now, what does insights look like? It can't just be sophisticated things that sit on a shelf. It can't be this like great thinking that nobody knows about. It has to be an integrated, cross-functional, insightful type of learning that can be shared. And what I learned a lot is that repetition, it was one thing where we would come up with a framework, and I got told by one of my bosses at one point, we're going to spend the next year telling everybody. And I was like, what? It only took us 3 months to do this. I don't want to spend a year of doing. And I learned pretty quickly that even when I, 3 months into that, thought I had told everybody what we had done, each day people walk up, I'm like, this is awesome. I've never even heard this. I'm like, what? Yeah, have you not heard it? Like, I was personally offended. So it's
a big organization. Yeah,
it's a big organization and people are busy. And so you think that the things that you've told people, and you think, oh, well, I spoke at this forum, that may not have gotten to people. They've been busy. They were sick. Who knows? And so I think there's just a lot that goes into like the thinking is honestly like 20% of it. And the making change happen is 80. And even if that thinking is 5% less perfect, but it is, if you change your segments from, at one point we did a consumer segmentation, came out with 8 segments. And I was like, great. But I've already forgotten the names that you just gave them. And so if that is the right answer, let's talk about it and let's look at it. But if we think that grouping some of these would actually move the needle more, let's use 5 segments and let's actually make sure we're being rigorous and analytical and true to what the data says, but bringing the lens of how do we actually execute. And if we're honest, segments 6 and 7, we're going to do the same things. We're going to talk to them the same way. We're going to do all these things. So I think that at the end of the day, being able to really bring the thinking, but across the finish line, because unfortunately I've seen too many projects that didn't make it all the way across the line. And that's the most frustrating part of business, is when you had really good things that could have done a lot, but didn't really implement or embed in the way that they should. So I think that's the hard part. But I would say to your point, that's the magic. And that's what a lot of companies are currently searching for.
And it's hard because, again, bureaucracy and siloed organizations and siloed people. And like you're saying, everyone has a bias. I'm working on this day and night for 3 months. I'm with Kantar or this or Numerator or that, you know, like, and I'm managing this work And I, you know, I don't have a great, and that's why I think also like the cross training is, or ideas like that can be helpful, because you need a bigger perspective. You need to understand what to invest in with your time and your effort, and like how enthusiastic about something you are going to be, with whom, you know, and when not to, you know what I mean? And when to dial it back. And it's hard to do when you don't have, you have imperfect information and very little visibility at the end of the day.
You do, but the risk is you do nothing. And I think that's the hard part, is that if you let yourself, and at a certain point when I was in a couple of roles, you get overwhelmed and you're like, I need to do everything. And I realized for 2 weeks straight, I did nothing. Like I was sitting there trying, like, okay, let's start thinking about this, but also we have to do this. And it has to tie, because this framework for shoppers has to tie with this framework for consumers. And then that has to be something that's actionable by the sales team and gets sold into retailers. And then the frontline is reciting. And at a certain point, you get so overwhelmed that you're like, I can't do anything. And when we were working together, we would get to that point where we're like, how do we take this that is very complicated and communicated out in a way that if I'm sitting there in an audience and I've never heard any of this before, I can do something different? Because if we can't do that, then it becomes too problematic or too challenging to be able to do it. And sometimes that leads us to almost like pull back and not do anything. And that's the biggest risk, is you can't do it all. But if you start to think through how hard doing insights in 2024 is, and 2027 and 2030, it's easy to say, I don't know if this will work. And I don't know if it will either, but at least moving along that journey and starting to move things forward and starting to take some of those swings into different spaces of innovation and into different things, I think that's where you start to really be able to start to find your footing. But it's easy to be able to say, here's reasons things won't work. And that's always been my bias. There was a saying a boss told me, if you come to me with a problem and no solution, you're part of the problem. And I think with insights, that's too often of people come in with, here's the three reasons that won't work. And especially if you're in a big company, somebody always has a reason why whatever great framework, whatever great thinking, whatever you've done won't work. And then putting it back on everybody and saying, okay, what will? Then how do we take this, be part of the solution, come into the fold, and let's get a cross-functional group and figure out what will work. And I think that's what I pushed whenever I was in the field, of like getting more of those groups to have people coming together and saying, here's what that looks like, to be able to learn from the field and still bring the right thinking, but do it in a way that is intellectually honest and in line with the data that we've got. So I think that's hard, is it's a balance of paralysis from analytics, or feeling like you have to change the world and you're a party of one. The reality is very much in the middle of those, but it's easy to feel that way on a day-to-day basis.
And it's the stars that have the vision and the wherewithal and the savvy, diplomacy, all the things to be in the middle and navigate that and actually get it done, right? That's who works their way up through the system. In any case, I think we touched on insights enough, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you at least something about your current role. So like, yes. Are you doing, hacking together activations with Lamborghinis and Four Peaks, or what, to the extent you can talk about stuff you've done? Have you done wild things over there?
So it's a good question. And I'm always pushing the teams on what else can we do with some of our brands, and trying to find the funding for Lamborghinis. I think to me, on a small scale, is when you got to get scrappy. And we don't have all the data, we don't have everything perfectly laid out for us, but you still got to move, you got to be innovative and do things. And so I think for me, been very fortunate to have an incredible team around me. And so some of the best brewers in the business.
How many employees total?
We're over 70 of full-time. And then we've got pub employees and then some other hourly employees as well. So it's a good size group. Everything from running two breweries, a pub, working with a wholesaler here in town, selling across quite a few states, has upped the ante on complexity. And I think similar, it's the same theme as a lot of I've realized in before, of simplicity, focus, and having good answers, but they don't always have to be perfection. Because if perfection can't be executed on, then especially in a craft beer world, it's never going to get across the line. And so I think for me, a lot of it's been about just getting the people right and making sure you've got the right team who's hungry and ready to go get things done. So that's been a lot of the last year have been just really working with the team and saying, hey, I come from a different experience, different ways of doing things in some ways. So let's mold those together, put everything there and be able to bring it to life. So specifically, we've launched a couple of things. We launched a partnership with Bad Birdie, the clothing company. So we launched a beer at the beginning of this year that's now the number two total beer innovation. Forget craft. We're competing in total beer, which is awesome. So that's been really, really fun a lot. We've got some other innovations coming out next year, continuing to kind of make sure the pub is operating, working well. And then to your point on marketing, it's a lot of every day. And so in the craft business, it's a lot of doing events and sponsorships mm-hmm. and going into bars and restaurants and just talking to people. And Four Peaks is fortunate to be founded in 1996. We have a 130-year-old building for the pub. And so when you're an institution, that name means something. When you tell somebody, hey, I run Four Peaks, they're like, oh, I used to go there when I was at ASU, or I was doing this, this, this. And you're like, that's cool. Like, that's a brand that just means something to people. And so putting that in action. So a lot of it's been being scrappy. We don't have the same budgets as, some places, all these things. So how do you put money to work? How do you come up with good ideas? Things like Bad Birdie, we've had over 100 million earned media impressions. You can't buy those. At least I can't. Yeah. So when you look at that, you start to do things that matter. We're looking a lot at how do we use our social media to engage with people and learn from Twisted Tea or Voodoo Ranger or insert a lot of different ones and take inspiration, but do it in our own way. So that's been a lot of it. We're trying to see what else disruptive, what we can do to kind of move the needle. But just really, when you've got a really healthy and strong and great business, it's of just making sure that everybody knows, okay, here's the North Star. Let's go do it together in a way that's going to be impactful. So far been really, really good gain and share. There's a lot of really good results, but built on an incredible team, a great group of people who just know and love beer, love the Four Peaks consumer, love Arizona. And that's been really, really fun. So not as many of my iguana, they've brought up like having an albino iguana somewhere.
Right. Or a family of them.
Correct. Maybe
a line of mascots.
A separate business.
Subsidiary.
There's always kind of opportunity out there, but a lot of it is just taking inspiration. The data on a single state level is not near as perfect as you always want it to be. So it'll tell you half the story, and then you got to get out there. We use our pub of I will just walk around and hold up a picture of the label that we're thinking for an upcoming beer and say,
that's awesome.
Do you have a second? Like, what do you think? And that's just a way to actually talk to the consumer and realize they're already in our pub. So they do love us already, or at least know of us. So that is one sample. Then let's go talk to the wholesaler. Let's go talk to accounts. Let's go talk to other consumers. And you put those things together, and then you can come up with things that work.
Hacking insights together with smaller sample size, but direct access, right?
Yes. That $50 bar tabs can get you already access to a ton of people and ask them of, hey, what do you sell a lot of? What do you think? All these things. So I think it's really fun to put it into work. That's part of what the joy of being in smaller companies is. It's easy to see the difference of if we run a brunch program, you see that did that work? Did people do it? If we buy SEO and we say, if I search for brewery near me or pub near me, did that work? What's our ROI on that spend? Whereas it's a lot harder when you get into paid social, you get into a lot of these things that you can get into neuroscience and all of those things. It's awesome. When you're an entrepreneur, you don't have the ability to do that. So you do what you can, you get scrappy, but it can't come at the expense of insights. Because if it's just me and a couple people sitting in a room coming up with everything, there's too much risk that you're going to come up with something that I would like. But the thing I learned and the most important thing is like, we always had to tell people, you're not the consumer. And no matter what you're looking at, even if I'm in the target market, it doesn't mean that I am the exact consumer that we're going after that we want to talk to. And that's been a big learning and a big thing in craft beer. Even though I love craft beer, I'm not the ideal consumer. I know too much. I'm not the just average Joe kind of guy that's going to be a craft beer consumer. And so to me, a lot of it's been getting past your own biases and beliefs and things and understand that consumer in a deeper way. And when you're an entrepreneur in small scale, you learn quickly, did that one work or did it not? And that's been the really fun of being scrappy. So no massive ideas, no iguanas yet. But I do think that it's a matter of day to day coming up with and just getting better and learning and being closer to that consumer than we've probably ever been before. And I can only imagine. I'm excited for the next 5 years. I'm terrified of the next 5 years, because I do think that the innovations and just the way of really understanding and interacting with consumers is going to keep going. And it's up to all of us to kind of maintain that pace of change and be open-minded to say, what other technologies? It's too easy to say, oh, well, we always look at this data source and this. Once a year, we update our one-year plan, three-year plan. There's so much more. And you know that. You've pushed me on it. And you've pushed me of like, what else can we think about? Have we thought about this? Have we talked to this person? That's where it's made. And that kind of hopefully helps to address that kind of crux that you were mentioning and kind of bringing up earlier.
Yeah. The future is going to be about constant pivots, change, just managing change and being at the forefront of it, or being at the, you know, getting run over by it. Yeah. Listen, dude, it's always a pleasure. I'm pumped. It was fun. We hadn't talked for probably 5 years. And then we talked for a little while when I asked you to be on the podcast, which was fun. This was a fun one. I really appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, sooner than 5 years.
Deal. Corey, appreciate it. Appreciate what you do. And this is awesome.
Inspiring Insights is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather De Leon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and was edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you're into the show, why not follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where you'll also find Corey and Samrat. And visit storiesbureau.com to learn more about how we tell stories that empower insights for companies all over the world. We'll be back in a month with another insightful conversation that'll inspire you to go beyond the job description. Until then, thanks for listening.